Good morning,
Hi,
Debbie.
Hank.
Hello. Today I want to talk to you about becoming a lawyer. What I have in mind is for people who want to choose to become a lawyer as a career. That would obviously be for young people, but it could also be for other people who choose to become a lawyer later in life.
Oh,
What
good.
I'm going to probably grill you with a number of questions. But the starting point is what do you have to study? How can you study? And then later on, I will ask you, once you have qualified as a lawyer, what are your career
Can I
paths?
take you one step back and say that a lawyer is all-encompassing for both advocate and attorney and anyone dealing in the law, so it could even be a legal advisor. Okay, so an attorney is somebody who deals with the public, and because in South Africa we have the referral system mostly, and I'm going to identify that more, an advocate is somebody who is a litigation specialist and deals with litigation and opinions on the law. And we don't have to deal with the public. Our clients, as an advocate, my client is the attorney. It has changed somewhat, and we're going to get into that. How do you study? You have to do an LLB. What job?
Yeah, you have to be an do an LLB, but you don't start there, do you?
You can. There's an option now to do a 4-year LLB, and the alternative is you do a BA law or a BCom law, which is your normal degree, and you do introduction to law subjects, and then you go on to do a 2-year LLB, which is a post-grad LLB, and then you're joining up with the 4-year stream. If you've done a undergraduate degree that doesn't have any law subjects, you have to catch up. So how those introductory subjects, so how it works at the university I attended at Rhodes is you get to do that in 1 year. So I had a degree, and then I wanted to study law, and I hadn't had any law at all. So in 1 year I did the 3 years of a normal BA law or BA BCom law. I did those 3 years simultaneously. So it's not a heavy load really, because it's just the law subjects that I didn't do previously. But what was difficult is you're doing for example a contract at year three, while you and then the next semester you do introduction to contract. So yes, you need a LLB. Previously you could do a B Juris, or and you could still be an attorney. But you couldn't be an advocate. I think that now, if I understand it correctly, that you need an LLB even for an attorney. And I should also correct myself. Under the new legislative provisions, so the Legal Practice Act, we are called legal practitioners, not lawyers, attorneys, or advocates. You say, I'm a legal practitioner and I'm enrolled in the High Court to practice as an attorney or as an advocate.
Okay, so the key degree is an LLB.
Correct.
I remember there was such a thing as a B Proc, but you're talking about a B Juris.
Oh yes, there's a B Proc as well. That allows you, if I understand it correctly, to become a prosecutor, and then after the experience and everything, you could convert to an attorney. But to go through the Legal Practice Act, remember, changed the requirements, and the requirements are LLB now.
Okay, so quite simple. That's not as straightforward as most people will understand. But you need a first degree, and then you do an LLB normally,
Yes,
correct?
and that is the recommended route for sure.
Or you can do an LLB from start.
Yes, a 4-year LLB, and it's only law subjects. The reason I say it's recommended to be a BCom or BA or even a BSc is it allows you to have more A, general knowledge, B, a fallback career, because law's hard, and thirdly, that you can then, if you've done a BCom, you understand all the accounting and everything. If you've done a BA, you might be more interested in copyright, and if you've done a BSc, you might be interested in intellectual property. property, or if you've got maths and things, you might be able to do more in construction cases. So it almost makes you stand out from the straight LLBs who've only ever studied law, have no other knowledge, and they have to learn it. So you get it just gives you a step ahead, and then and you can talk the language of the lay client when you've got that knowledge.
And then, now, once you've done your LLB, you are not a lawyer or a legal
Oh no.
practitioner
Oh
yet.
no. No, that's just the that's like going to kindergarten. Okay, so at that point, once you're qualified with your LLB, then that's when you choose which field you're going to go in. So you might decide at that point you don't want to you don't want to be a legal practitioner. You don't want to be an attorney or an advocate. You want to be a legal advisor. You go into corporate or and there's lots of jobs like that, or compliance officer. I think it's called a company secretary that makes sure that the company is compliant to all the law. So there's, banking, insurance, listed companies, all of those need people with LLBs as well. But then for lawyers, for legal practitioners, it's also at that point that you decide, are you going to be an advocate or are you going to be an attorney? Now, previously, that was a very clear-cut thing because that's, personality-wise and what your interests are and dealing with people and all of that, you're either going to want to be an advocate or an attorney. No, but what's happened over the years is the selection process to become an advocate. You've got to go for an interview and all the rest of it, and also the financial, which I'll come back to, meant that people were being attorneys first, getting the experience, getting, more knowledge of the law, and then later on applying to be an advocate. Now, I was never an attorney. I went straight to advocating because I knew I wanted to be one, and also I was 40 something years old when I got there. So I studied in my mid-40s. I decided that the law was lacquer and I wanted to study it. And so I didn't have enough years to set up. It takes about 7 years to have a good practice going as an advocate, financially and, relationships with attorneys and so on. So a successful practice is after about 7 years. So I didn't have enough time to first be an attorney and then start building a practice later. Also, if you're going to be an attorney, you sign up for articles with an attorney's firm, so just interviews and processes like that. And just recently, and towards, I don't know, last, well, it was in 2024, last year, the Legal Practice Council has set a minimum salary of 8,000. Now, there were some people who were doing their articles salary of 3,000, having to have their own car and cell phone, and then in the big law firms they could earn 30,000 rand a month and be provided with a cell phone and normally have to have their own car but a fuel allowance or something like that. And during your 2 years of articles are 2 years long, unless you've studied through the PLT, practical legal training. You normally do the practical legal training and the exams that related to that. Over a period of 2 years. But if, for example, you didn't get articles, you could go to PLT full time for 6 months, and then your articles would only be a year long. Here's something interesting, Henk. You can register articles without an LLB, and then you register articles for 5 years. You can't be admitted as an attorney until you've got the LLB, but you could be working for a law firm and doing your articles for 5 years. And if you do an LLB and you finish your LLB in 3 years, you can convert it back and you can then get admitted as an attorney, even though you've done it in less than 5 years. So there are ways of starting to that articles before you got your LLB.
All right, so let me unpack this. If you're a school leaver and you don't have money, you can start articles and earn what, 3,000, 8,000 rand a month?
8,000 is the minimum salary now.
8,000. So you can start off with you can look for a job as with an attorney's firm, and you can earn 8,000 rand a month and then study part time while you're doing your articles. Is
That's
that
correct.
the plan?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's stay with attorneys because I know the advocate route is a little different. Now, 8,000 rand a month today, you can't live on 8,000 rand a month. You need a little bit
Well, a hell
more
of a lot
to
of people do, but not if you've got your own car and phone and you need to use it all the time. It's quite difficult. Unless
it's
you're
tough.
living with mom or girlfriend or boyfriend or something.
But it's better than in my day. In my day, it was just unaffordable. It was just not an option for me. But today, at least you can earn 8,000 and study part time. Now, that's a tough one, the studying part time or studying full time. Studying part time means you work 8 hours a day. Let's say probably 7 or 9, but thereabouts. And then you study at night. And then you go to night school at a
Or
university.
correspondence through UNISA or whatever, and you just have study groups and things. There are so many
Okay.
people who do that. I take my hat off to them. I don't know how they do the distance learning. I mean, you have to have so much self-discipline to be able to, after a hard day's work, to sit down and apply yourself to your studies. But so many people do. It's amazing.
It's amazing. I just, when I was young, it was a tough prospect for me, working that many hours a day. So we have two parts. We go to university full time if you've got the money, and you do a minimum of a 4-year degree, which is an LLB, and then you do articles, and for 2 years, so it's a 6-year path, and then you become an attorney, and you will probably start with as a junior attorney and earn maybe 30,000 rand a month. Am I right?
Or less, and also just because you were given articles doesn't mean you're guaranteed a permanent position in an attorney's firm. So you could have your articles and now you're looking for work.
Okay. Now let's just switch to LLB. How's that different? Sorry, advocate.
Okay, so an advocate, you do pupillage and not articles, and pupillage is 1 year. You get assigned a mentor who's an advocate, and you hang out in their chambers, go to court with them. In Natal, in KZN, we do lectures. For example, I lecture pupils on ethics when there's different advocates who give up their time to lecture different subjects: motion court, civil trials, criminal procedure. I'm forgetting something. Legal writing, very important. And then same as with PLT, that you write your exams, you have to write exams for advocates as well. Now, not every advocate wants to be a member of the Bar Council. So Bar Council was the only method previously, but subsequently there's been a breakaway from the Bar Council and there are other advocates. I'm a member of the Bar Council, and they do the pupillage in this way. And then you have to write Bar Council exams as well as the Legal Practice Council exams. You have to do both lots of exams if you've gone straight to be an advocate. So that year, the pupillage year, is hellish. And also, you do not get paid. In fact, you have to pay for the photocopying and everything once you get accepted as a pupil. So you've got to maintain yourself for that entire year. The payment that you're paying is really like 1,000 rand or 2,000 rand or whatever it is, but it's not astronomical. But you cannot become an advocate through the Bar Council in any event, unless you have enough money to support yourself. That includes having your own car, having your cell phone, being able to get to court, being able to get to lectures, and all of that. On the independent bar, they still do some training. The LPC exam is what is Now, if you were an attorney first and you already qualified as a legal practitioner, having passed the articles and your PLT exams, then you just do a conversion, and that's not an, you don't have to write the LPC exams. You just have to write the Bar Council if you're with the Bar Council. If you have done the PLT and articles, and you want to go to the independent bar, you can just do a conversion. So it's not part of the Bar Council. The only restriction on that is since the Legal Practice Act came out, because they wanted to do away with the referral system, because you're paying an attorney and an advocate to work on your case, and advocates are litigation specialists. We don't go filing stuff at court. We don't write letters to the other side, all the rest of it, the Bar Council advocates. So you don't, in my mind, you don't want the person who's the litigation specialist doing all of that stuff and costing you more. You want a candidate attorney. You want somebody who's doing articles, who's going to cost half, a fraction of the cost, and who's going to do all the running around, because you can spend a whole day at court filing and doing sorting out a file or something. You do not want an advocate doing it. But there are some instances where you don't need an attorney. Say, for example, criminal matters, or I can't think of, because I don't believe in it. I find it hard to think of when I wouldn't want an attorney on board. But in the independent bar, you not get briefed by an attorney, and you. But then you have to have a trust account, and you have to be, you are what is called a trust account advocate, and then you have to write LP, the Legal Practice Act, Legal Practice Council exams on managing a practice and the trust account and accounting. And you have to be audited every year, as every attorney is. Their trust account has to be audited. If you're an advocate, with who's not a referral advocate, you're not a member of the bar, you're in the independent, and you want to be able to get clients directly, heavens knows why, then you have to write those exams as well, and then you register as an advocate, but only if you've written those exams as a trust, an advocate with a trust.
Okay, I understand the value of pupillage because you now kind of trail an experienced advocate, and you see how it's done, and you get a little bit of experience, although it's not directly. You know how an advocate should operate. If you don't do that, I imagine you're not gonna. It's going to be tough if you did articles as an attorney and you switch. Being an advocate will be tough.
I think so, unless you have been an attorney who's briefing advocates all the time. But even then, I think it will be quite difficult. But I cannot imagine having practiced without my year of pupillage. I think my year of pupillage was the most valuable. And it wasn't always a year. It started off with you had 3 months, and then your mentor, who used to be called the master, we've gone away from that language, would say, "Are you ready or not to proceed, to be, to be a are you ready to be an advocate? Do you know enough?" Then it was extended to 6 months, and now it's a year. But there is still a requirement, Rule 11 of the Legal Practice Code of Conduct. I have to sign off on my pupils and say they're ready to. They've done all the. There's set requirements. I've got to have done a civil trial, and criminal trial, and motion court, and so on, and then you still have to say, are they ready or not to be an advocate? But I think that if you were an attorney, you can get right of appearance in the High Court. So you can, as an attorney, you now have the right to argue in High Court as an attorney. I think the qualification is 3 years in good standing. So you've got to have been an attorney for 3 years, then you can apply to be for the right of appearance in the High Court. And then you can start doing, inverted commas, advocates work, inverted commas, in the High Court, as an attorney. And there are quite a number of attorneys who appear in the High Court as attorneys, and they robe and they argue matters.
Okay. I've got in my mind something which could be good news or it could be bad news. You've done your 4 years of studying, or minimum of 4 years, and you've done your pupillage, and you are now an advocate, and let's say you're very smart and very good. The bad news is you don't stop studying.
Oh no, that's the
Because
news. If you're not learning.
you actually do not know everything about the law.
No, and you and I don't know any advocate who will ever claim to know everything about the law. Our job is to research, and we become litigation specialists, opinions, we do opinions. And the reason that it's given to us, I mean, my attorney's running around, headless fowl with everything else they're doing. We sit there and attorney brings a problem to us and says, can we have an opinion on this? We look at all the facts of the case, we look at all the law, we look at all the recent judgments, we look, and we get to just enjoy the process of analyzing it all and giving, telling what our interpretation of it is and where the weaknesses in the case are, where the strengths in the case are, whether it's worth pursuing litigation, whether it's not worth pursuing litigation. And then once we litigate, obviously we're not allowed to take cases to court that have absolutely zero merit. So there's got to be some merit. You've got to believe in the case. And every day you're learning something new because every day you're researching. It's the part of the job I love, delving into cases yeah, I love it when a new area of law comes in the door or something that I haven't worked on in a while. Like, oh yeah, what's the new cases in that? Yeah. So you need to want to be able to do that if you're an advocate.
You need to be really interested and committed to lifelong learning, is what I
Yes,
understand.
an advocate once said to me, if you want to learn something new every day, become an advocate. And if you're not learning something new every day, then you must know that you're not a good advocate.
That's a very good line for just about any profession. But I believe in lifetime learning, so it is something that doctors should do the same, in just about any profession, because things change all the time. There's always new information.
So as you know, the Health Professions Council, they have continuous learning, and you have to present, you have to attend, courses, and you get points, and you have to have so many points. Now, the legal profession at this point doesn't have that, but there is talk about introducing that, and I think that's a wonderful idea. And I guest lecture often at universities, well, not often, but as often as I can. And it's just a lovely opportunity to put your head around what students are learning and what they need to learn. And I teach ethics for the same reason. Well, not the same reason entirely, because I do think that our profession is a calling. I do believe that if we fail as advocates and attorneys, and then obviously judges, if we fail, then society breaks down. So, because then people take the law into their own hands. So we have, as advocates, we have a duty to argue because we've got an adversarial system. We have to put our client's case before the court without fear of favours expression, and we have to know what we're doing. We have to. It's our duty to inform the court of all new cases and any new precedent, or if another provision has found something differently, it's our duty. So it's not just that we enjoy learning, we actually have, it's our duty to do so. Well.
Okay. You're obviously passionate about the law, and I know you well enough by now to know that you are. But would you describe being an advocate as a very rewarding career?
Yes, and exhausting and stressful, and I have got a thank you card that has been on my bookshelf in my chambers for 3 years, and it's thank you for helping with that case. And but the most amazing thing in there is thank you for the hug you gave me when I needed it. Now, not every advocate's going to do that kind of thing, and a lot of advocates, it's head down, make money, it's a business, and I have to get better at that part of it. But it's really rewarding. The kind of work I do is with dealing directly with people. I don't do a lot of commercial work. I do some, but not a hell of a lot. And it tends to be smaller companies, owned by one or two people or something. So by the time someone comes into an advocate's chambers, it's possibly already the worst time in their lives. So how I handle the case and how I treat that lay client is going to make the world of difference in their lives. And that duty rests heavy, but it also is so rewarding. And you get paid to do something that's absolutely amazing. I get paid to sit and research and give my opinion. So often when I started this, and I had my younger brother living with me, and he'd ask me, "Hey, Deb, what do you think of this and this?" And I said, "Do you know that people pay me for my opinion? So money up front." I have spent a lifetime being told that I'm too opinionated. Well, this is the career for me. So it's stressful. You've got deadlines. It's hard work, and you can work through late nights, and when you've got a deadline, you just have to do that. Someone comes to you with an urgent matter. I got a matter once at 9 a.m. in the morning that houses were being demolished by the municipality, and we had an order by lunchtime. Just straight after lunch, we went back to court to hold them in contempt because they just carried on, and 8 houses were destroyed in that time. If I had taken longer, all 60 houses would have been destroyed. You're working under enormous pressure, and your body holds all of that. Your mind spins the day before. You've got a big argument in court. You can hardly, I mean, I fall asleep easily, but then I wake up. And so if I'm awake at 12, it's because matters going through my head, and I can carry on working because, and there's many a time where I've argued an urgent matter where I haven't slept.
Well, you've explained something to me. I know a lot of people who have qualified as lawyers, and then chose not to practice. I never asked them why, but I can guess.
The other thing is that I do a lot of work where I'm a curator ad litem, so I'm the curator in law. That's what it translates into. I get appointed by the court either to someone's got dementia or a child needs a representative or needs input on a matter to do with children or whatever. But in that role, I'm not fighting. I'm not on either side per se. And it's I just I'm reporting to the court. So an RAF matter, what are the prospects of success? Is this person needing someone to look after the award when the RAF do pay out, the Road Accident Fund do pay out, whatever? And it's such you're still working hard, but there's no fight. It's no adversarial. There's nothing in that adversary. There's no adversarial part to that role. And I love doing them because it just gives a break from the war, inverted commas, that goes on. But remember also that for most advocates at the Bar Council, not everyone gets this right all the time. You're not fighting your colleague. That's your colleague. You are representing the lay client in court to the best of your ability. And the court relies on you to reveal all your strengths of your case and the weaknesses of the other to attack. But your colleague remains your colleague, and they're still there. They're still your colleague after the ne after this fight. So
When you say colleague, you mean the
the
advocate for the other side.
advocate for the other side, who in court we refer
Yeah.
to as my learned friend. And sometimes you
Yeah.
want to say, my not so learned friend or my learned irritation. But no, you always refer to them as my learned friend in
Yeah.
court. And yeah, so that person might be the very person that you go and ask for advice from in a week's time, because we have, although we all work, we all sole practitioners, we all work for ourselves. We cannot form firms. We cannot be a collective in any way, other than we are allowed to share some office expenses. So, and we also, as bar council advocates, we are restricted as to where we may hold chambers. So there's got to be bar council approved chambers, and we've got to be together. It used to be that all advocates used to be in one building, but now there's, 200, 300 advocates in KZN, so we're in multiple buildings. But the idea of that is that you can go and knock on your colleague's door and say, this is my matter. This is the research I've done. Am I on the right track? Have I missed anything? So that, because this duty to the court that we have to be well informed of that, you will often go and soundboard with another advocate. And in fact, even in our rules, if we have an ethical dilemma, firstly, if someone misbehaves, we're meant to report it. So if another advocate acts unethically, we are required to report it, but we report it to someone senior in our group, in our chambers, and then they try and handle it. It doesn't go directly to the Bar Council, and the Bar Council comprises entirely of advocates who have been nominated, voted on, and give their time for the benefit of the entire collective of advocates who belong to the Bar Council.
Okay, I've got,
Carol.
yeah.
Carry on.
I come from the IT world,
Yes, indeed.
and not from the legal world, and but I have visited and been in chambers, and I've seen movies and what and images of advocates' offices or chambers, and I see these rows and rows of leather-bound books, and coming from the IT world, I say, why is that? Why are we still living in a world where court procedures, legal documents are still in books?
Hink, you're
Why
showing
is it
your
not
age.
online?
You're showing your age. It was a long
I
time
know
ago. No. Okay,
it's
so.
hard not to.
No, so I do not have leather-bound books on my shelf. I have a lot of lever arch files, but I do not have,
Yeah.
and a lot of textbooks, but I do not have any leather-bound books. And the reason is my law libraries. I've got LexisNexis and Jutor, and then obviously access to Safley, and then others, some overseas ones.
Okay.
But I do it all online. The difference is that when it's all online, you pay every month through your heavily for your law library, whereas if you just buy those reports, you've got them in your library. You don't ever pay for them again. It's a once-off payment, which is what I prefer with my software. Like, I don't have Office 365. I have three Office standalone, because I don't want to have to pay every year. But with my law library, I do it online, and that's mainly because the loose leaf books, the reference books, are updated online easier. And also just because I'm an IT, I used to be an IT too, I like the search capabilities, and so that I'm quite confident that I have found everything relating to that aspect.
Okay.
But remember that those bound books, there are also they're all cases. And every single, so they came out in just normal, it's actually a blue cover for duty books. And then the advocates actually put them in leather bound things. And it used to be you would get one or two a year. Now you're getting five or six a year of those. And then the advocates bind them and make them look all larny. Because, we larny, or meant to be larny. And then as for the courts, Gauteng is already online, case on case, online cases online. Gosh, I've got it. I do quite a lot of work in Johannesburg High Court, and everything is done online. So You file your documents with the court online, and the court writes to you online. Your date, all your certificates, everything is online, and then you all sit, and you can actually steer a judge to the place in the documents on your computer in court. Now,
Okay.
if the IT was reliable, and if we, the last time I was in court, we had load shedding, so everyone downloaded a version, so that they didn't have to try and, so we could go onto our batteries of our laptops. I was talking for 4.5, I spoke for 4.5 hours that day, so it was a whole day of argument. So then, but then you've got that option. However, I'm not yet good at that. I've tried going into court with my laptop. In part, old people's problems. My focals don't work so great. So either I've got to put my computer down, and then I'm looking down too much and not communicating with the judge, so that I can get it onto the bottom part of my glasses to see. And then, so those are the kind of problems I've been having. So, but mostly, and I don't know any other advocate who does this. I work mostly from a mind map. So if I'm working if I take my laptop and I'm working electronically, it's only where I have got a gap in my mind map where the court asks me something. But I have a mind map that normally it's 3 or 4 pages. I've spoken before, not in the case I just referred to, but in a different case, also in excess of 4 hours, on about, I think I might have had 5 pages of mind maps. And it frees me up to, and on that mind map is recorded the page number, the paragraph number. So if the judge says, where in the affidavit does it say this? By referring to my mind map, I can say page, 928 at paragraph 1024. And then the judge will go and read it, and, or make a note and go read it later, depending on whether the judgment's going to be reserved or not. So a lot of advocates now no longer have those books. And when advocates retire, or like two of my colleagues have just been elevated to the bench recently, they've got these books. Now what? They have researchers as judges who will do the electronic researches and or in physical. And there is also a law library that both attorneys and advocates can go to. And now we can just phone or email and say, I'm looking for this case. And they will email it to you.
Oh wow. Okay, so the law has caught up
Yeah. So
eventually.
in KZN, we don't have the case online, and that the only reason that it wasn't started was we had did not have sufficient IT infrastructure. It's really difficult when you've got an old building and historic stuff. But our court building is being refurbished. It should be ready in 2025 this year, and then also they've upgraded the IT, so that's going to happen. I know the Eastern Cape is moving over, or they've had trial runs of the case online and case online. Yeah, it's nice in that you can join some. My attorney's added me, so every time the attorney does anything, I can see, or either side does anything, like there's an application to compel. I'm not necessarily involved in that. The correspondent is doing it, but I can see that it's happening. Yeah.
Okay, I want to take a step back because I know in your situation you didn't start out becoming a lawyer when after you left school,
Yeah.
or rather studying law. You did this in your mid-40s or early-40s, and you made that decision because for me, it's encouraging because I don't think everybody would think that way. You know, people get stuck in a job that they don't like or that's not rewarding in whatever way, and they think they have no out. I think the lesson that you, the example that you have for people is that even in your 40s, you can decide to change career or invest your time and money or other resources in doing something great for yourself.
Yeah,
You
I this idea of someone being stuck in a job is foreign to me. I had run my own business for a number of years. I've done a lot of different work. I like learning new things. I taught myself how to use Excel and Word and everything, and then I went and wrote the exam, and then wrote the exam for a trainer, and so I became a mouse and Microsoft Office user specialist trainer. Started a training center. My son went to high school. It wasn't didn't oh, I got headhunted. I was working for a company and traveling. I was responsible for six African countries while he was in his first year of high school in boarding school. He hated it. I really needed to be away for weekends as well. It didn't suit me. Resigned, went and moved to Grahamstown, and helped out a friend with a conference that she was organizing, international conference, and then got a call from an advocate. Do I want to be secretary? He also had a bit more interesting because he had an aviation business that he needed me to be a little involved in, and he had this dream project that he had in his mind. And we raised funds for Reach for a Dream, and he flew through Africa until he folks landed in somewhere, Serengeti. And so it was very interesting, but I was typing all his legal documents, and he would do things like, I worked on a case a few years ago. It was sanitation. I want a copy of that judgment. I had never worked in law, and I was like, need a copy of this judgment. And then after I left him, I went and worked at the Rhodes Law Clinic as the manager there. And so that was my limited advocate experience for 3 years, and then 3 years at the law clinic. And by then I was persuaded I needed to study law. It was logical, it's open for interpretation, even though it's logical. So the law gets written by the legislature, the courts interpret it, and the interpretation of it is through the lens of the Constitution. And I give praise every day for that Constitution of ours, because we can do justice in cases all the time, and we can persuade the court. It's an art of persuasion, and you only do that through knowledge and knowing and understanding the other side's argument, predicting what it's going to be. Although we cannot be ambushed, so we have to know, the other side has to reveal what they intend to argue. But I was working at the Rhodes Law Clinic, and my son was just finishing up with varsity, and I thought, what is the point? I was very nervous about being correspondent because I don't think I had the self-discipline. I was also working as a warden, it's an awful name, but basically like a matron for one of the reses. I had 62 girls in my res, mostly first years, and then lesser as they get to the higher years. And two students as sub wardens working with me on that. So there's, they are students, so that I can be the best warden I can. And I thought, time's going to go by anyway. And I couldn't see a path past my first year. I couldn't see how I was going to pay for second year or third year, and how I was going to do pupillage. But I just wanted it so badly. And so I had enough money for first year, and my son was in his final year. And then he came back and said he wanted to do honours. So suddenly I had to find money for his honours and my. And I got an award for being the best warden, and there was my fees paid. And then I also got a discount because I was still working for the university. And I was also got, and my son reminded me just the other day, I also got a discount for being the second child at varsity because he was the first child. And then I applied for bursaries, and I got bursaries, one bursary paid for my books for the entire year. As a warden, I didn't get any pay, I didn't get cash, but I was required to eat in the dining hall, and I was required to stay in the res. I had a little flat attached to the res, so there's my accommodation and food taken care of. So I did books. I did books for other advocates and for some farmers and so on. And then in my final year, and I thought, I don't know how I'm going to get through this because one of my students had died just after giving birth. She had a child in the December, and she had died in the January after being in a coma with a misdiagnosed a burst appendix. And I was at my wit's end. And then what I did was I took a job as manager of the local gentlemen's club. It used to be a bar and restaurant. And they obviously that they're busy at night. So I would cash in the morning and go in the morning, cash up everything, take stock, go off to my lectures, come back for lunchtime, serve lunches and everything. Head staff, I was just making sure everything was right. And then go back for my tats in the afternoon and then work in the evening. So I had two full-time jobs throughout. But Rhodes doesn't offer part-time studying. So I was studying during the day. It was my main focus and everything else was around that. And it was doable. It was, I mean, I'm no genius. Well, I'm quite clever, but I'm no genius. And I was double the age of the next oldest student in my class when the year started. For the first few months, I was 44 and he was 22. I mean, all these people, this old lady in the class, but I loved it. I absolutely loved it. Absolutely loved it.
And I bet you showed them up. I bet you
No,
showed them up.
well, I got kicked under the table a few times. Would you just shut up? It's Friday. We want to go drinking. Stop asking questions. But no, I learned so much. And that enthusiasm and that it's almost naive enthusiasm. And one of my friends, she was going to be a prosecutor with baddies behind bars, and ended up after she'd been a prosecutor for a few years in a terrible area locally, and she had to be accompanied by police from her doorstep to court, and she couldn't even go and have a smoke break without a policeman next to her because of death threats. And it's just like these kids, they're born into this situation. Their parents are drug dealers. They are going to be, and there's murder and the gang accident. And she just couldn't take it anymore. It was just too awful. And she would be a brilliant advocate. But she's running a hotel in Cambodia instead, which is owned by a lawyer.
Yeah,
I
I
don't know
think you
how I'm
told
telling
me
you.
about
Sorry,
her.
I'm repeating myself like an old lady.
You t No, not at
So,
all, not at all. Not everybody listens to every podcast, but you also told me about her, a list of names
that's
on her
correct.
fridge.
The
Was
same
that the
person, yeah.
same
So maybe
person
I need to explain that again
that,
for those who didn't listen to that podcast. Because lists of
yeah.
names of people who had been jailed, that she had successfully prosecuted, who died in jail. And obviously it's gang related and things, so it doesn't stop when they go and they get jailed. But yeah, so in the Westville prison, and that list just grew longer, and then she was done. She was done. Yeah.
Yeah, that's so. There's a very sad side to
Yeah.
that. Oh, I've got one last question. Going to university is, yes, I understand what you're saying. You need discipline if you want to study remotely. But going to university is also a lot of time gets wasted because you go to classes, and in between classes is you've got free time, and from my experience, you do about 4 or 5 classes a day instead of filling your day with 8 classes, just because of the scheduling of the lecturers and professors and what have you. Studying part-time or studying remotely. And I looked up last week in preparation for our talk. UNISA and a few other universities offer online LLB degrees. Can one do a degree in less than 4 years, that LLB degree, because you are now not limited by the availability of the lecturers. It's you can probably put your head down, work 12, 16 hours a day, and do a lot more. So can one cut that time down?
The Council for Higher Education settled on the 4 years. I don't know that you can do constitutional law B and A at the same time. I think you would have to do one after another. With and then you would be, you could possibly write the exams at the same time, because remember the exams are set. You can't, and even if you're studying online, you're still writing exams in controlled circumstances.
Oh, and that's
Yeah,
fine.
or
Yeah.
semesters, so semester exams you normally have. So
Yeah.
in theory, yes, in theory, online you could do, if that's what you're doing, full-time studies online. But let me just also say about like your lectures at varsity, that okay, I love the time in between where we're exchanging ideas. I mean, I remember a 3-hour argument about whether engagement is actually still a valid contract, and whether if one party breaks the engagement and there's fault and whatever, whether there is damages claim there. Now, you wouldn't just have that discussion in any other environment, and it was fantastic because it made me think of DLEG and contract, and also the minute your lecture ends, you're going into the library for that big assignment or studying for the next thing, or you also need the research time and things like that. So I never found the hours wasteful, really, to be honest. I found it invigorating and busy and lovely. But then I was always doing another job throughout varsity. I was never not doing it. So I don't know, I have never thought of whether you could go shorter. I do know that if people have got the discipline to do through UNISA, that time's going to go whether you enroll or whether you don't. It's a 4 years. If it say that you can't just change it 4 years. If you enroll now, and even if you're unsure, you do fewer subjects, time's still going to go by. I know two other people, one who's an attorney and one who's an advocate, was also secretary to advocates. One was actually the bar secretary. And time's going to go whether you're studying or not. You may as well, after 4 years, if you're going to do it in the normal course, or if it's going to be 6 years, you're still going to get to that age. The only difference is in one instance you're going to have a degree, and the other you're not. So, and you're going to maybe miss a party and a couple of Netflix movies, but that's really it. I have on a previous podcast told the story of Lexing Partey, who became the president of the Supreme Court of Appeals. And he was motivated by watching law students getting drunk every afternoon. Those are the ones who didn't have a job to keep, to get through them, that were privileged enough not to need to work. But I think that it's a calling. I think I know that we have so many careers that aren't, that used to historically were a calling. And if you're a good advocate and you're putting in those hours, you can earn, an advocate and an attorney, earn a good salary, a very good salary if you're very good and you don't do too many pro bono matters. But you've got to really care about the outcome. And if you really care about well, not the outcome, but maybe doing your job the best, that's what I always say. I have no control of the outcome of my cases. I have control about how much effort I put in, what my preparation is, how well I argue, all of that. And if you really care about doing that well and you care about the system, then your choice to start studying is already made. Then those hours that you put in are going to be towards something. So once that decision's made,
Yeah,
if
you
you've
made
been
that
in
point to me yesterday in
Yeah, so that's what I don't know if that's the right thing to say, but I would have turned 45 whether I was studying law or not. I would have turned 46, and instead I'm in a different place because I gave myself a chance. And
that is, that's a life lesson, and I know it's got that's actually not applicable to law only, it's applicable to anything. And I would like to emphasize this. Time passes for us anyway. And you can spend that time doing something very valuable for yourself, or you can do something playing, or not doing something valuable. Or you can waste it in a job or a place that you don't want to be. because that time is going to pass anyway.
If you hate your job, you should be looking at what it is that you like doing and start working towards that and thinking, so what if it's going to take me 5 years? 5 years is going to go anyway. Yeah, exactly. The biggest thing that I had to overcome to be 100% truthful, as if I'm not always, but it's more personal. The thing that I had to overcome was the fear of failing, and it was,
I knew you were going to say fear. I knew you were
I
going to
said
say
to
fear.
myself, this is my son's last year. If he when he finishes, wherever he might go to, I can start whatever career I want. I can do whatever. I'm going to give it a bashful this year. If I fail, no biggie. There's no biggie. If I pass, and I've made the Dean's merit list every year. But that just getting into the mindset that if I don't try, I'm never going to know. I'm never going to know whether I could have done it. And I created the opportunity, created the space for myself by taking the job at the legal at the law clinic, and then taking the job as warden and being a second child. I created an opportunity that I could afford to go and study and try.
Well done, well done, and you really are a good example to a lot of people.
Thank you. I hope, I wish for everyone to not be held back, because I have got the best job that I've ever had in my life, and I am the happiest I have ever been.
Well, I think there's another little. Advice here for everybody is do something you are really passionate at, and do something you're going to maintain to be passionate about. Because if you're not, that is when life becomes dreary and boring and a stressful world.
Agreed.
So,
And if your passion shifts, shift.
change. Change. There's no harm in changing.
Want to say one last thing
Let's
before we
let.
conclude. You don't
Yep.
have to do Latin anymore as part of the
I looked at the curriculum for law the last week, and I noticed there's no Latin, and I also noticed no Roman law. And I did Roman law, and it was fascinating, and it was pointless, but it was
We do.
fascinating.
I did Roman law, but it was part of the introduction to law in one semester. So the 12 tables, and it costs you an arm and a leg, because if you owed money, they could cut off your arm and your leg, and you used to be able to go
Yeah.
to be jailed for not paying your debts. So at least you didn't have to have to pay debts. You had a roof over your head, and you got given food. But yeah, you didn't earn any money. Yeah, so yeah, the Roman law, and our law is still based on Roman law basis, common law, and then the Roman Dutch is actually what it is. It's because of the Dutch settlers, and then on top of that, we have
Yeah.
English. A lot of our procedure is English, and now, of course, customary law is elevated to equal law as well. So, yeah, we have a fantastic and wildly interesting, and all got to be constitutional. Yeah, fantastic, fantastic history, rich history, and rich law.
Okay, let's
Thank
cut it off there. Okay.
you, Hank.
Okay,
Take
talk
care.
to you soon.
Bye.
Cheers, bye.